Pink Floyd from Wikipedia, the free encyclopedia at en.wikipedia.org. Pink Floyd were an English rock band formed in London. They achieved international acclaim with their progressive and psychedelic music, distinguished by their use of philosophical lyrics, sonic experimentation, extended compositions, and elaborate live shows. Pink Floyd is one of the most commercially successful and musically influential groups in the history of popular music. Pink Floyd were founded in 1965 by students Sid Barrett, Nick Mason, Roger Waters, and Richard Wright. They gained popularity performing in London's underground music scene during the late 1960s, and under Sid Barrett's leadership, released two charting singles and a successful debut album, The Piper at the Gates of Dawn, 1967. David Gilmour joined as a fifth member in December 1967. Sid Barrett left the band the following April 1968 due to deteriorating mental health exacerbated by drug use. Roger Waters became the band's primary lyricist and, by the mid-1970s, their dominant songwriter, devising the concepts behind their critically and commercially successful albums The Dark Side of the Moon, 1973, Wish You Were Here, 1975, Animals, 1977, The Wall, 1979, and The Final Cut, 1983. Richard Wright left Pink Floyd in 1979, followed by Roger Waters in 1985, declaring it a, quote, spent force, unquote. David Gilmour and Nick Mason continued as Pink Floyd. Richard Wright rejoined them as a session musician, and later a band member. Touring as Pink Floyd until 1994, the three musicians, David Gilmour, Nick Mason, and Richard Wright, produced two more albums, A Momentary Lapse of Reason, 1987, and The Division Bell, 1994. After nearly two decades of acrimony, Pink Floyd reunited with Roger Waters in 2005 for a performance at the global awareness event, Live 8. But Gilmour and Waters have since stated they have no plans to reunite as a band again. Sid Barrett died in 2006, and Richard Wright in 2008. The final Pink Floyd studio album, The Endless River, recorded without Waters and based on material recorded in 1993 to 1994, was released in November 2014. Pink Floyd were inducted into the U.S. Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 1996 and the U.K. Music Hall of Fame in 2005. By 2013, the band had sold more than 250 million records worldwide, including 75 million certified units in the United States. 1963 to 67, early years. Formation. Roger Waters met drummer Nick Mason while they were both studying architecture at the London Polytechnic at Regent Street. They first played music together in a group formed by Keith Noble and Clive Metcalf with Noble's sister Sheila. Keyboardist Richard Wright, a fellow architecture student, joined them later that year, and the group became a sextet named Sigma Six, the first band to include Roger Waters, who was at this time playing lead guitar, Richard Wright, who at first played rhythm guitar since there was rarely an available keyboard, and Nick Mason on drums. The band started performing during private functions while rehearsing in a tea room in the basement of the Regent Street Polytechnic. They performed songs by The Searchers and material written by their manager and songwriter, fellow student Ken Chapman. In September 1963, Waters and Mason moved into a flat at 39 Stanhope Gardens near Crouch End, London, owned by Mike Leonard, a part-time tutor at the nearby Hornsby College of Art and the Regent Street Polytechnic. Nick Mason moved out after the 1964 academic year, and guitarist Bob Close moved in during September 1964, prompting Roger Waters' switch to bass. Sigma Six went through a number of other transitory names, including the Megadeths, the Abdabs and the Screaming Abdabs, Leonard's Lodgers, and the Spectrum Five, before settling on the T-Set. In 1964, as Keith Noble and Clive Metcalf left to form their own band, guitarist Sid Barrett joined Close and Waters at Stanhope Gardens. Barrett, 2 years younger, had moved to London in 1962 to study at the Camberwell College of Art. Waters and Barrett were childhood friends. Roger Waters often visited Sid Barrett and watched him play guitar at Barrett's mother's house. Nick Mason said about Sid Barrett, quote, "In a period when everyone was being cool in a very adolescent, self-conscious way, Sid was unfashionably outgoing. My enduring memory of our first encounter is the fact that he bothered to come up and introduce himself to me." Keith Noble and Clive Metcalf left the T Set in late 1963, and Bob Close introduced the band to singer Chris Dennis, a technician with the Royal Air Force, RAF. In December 1964, they managed to secure their first recording time through one of Richard Wright's friends who let them use some downtime for free. Wright, who was taking a break from his studies, did not participate in the session. When the RAF assigned Chris Dennis a post in Bahrain in early 1965, Sid Barrett became the band's frontman. Later that year, they became the resident band at the Countdown Club near Kensington High Street in London, where, from late night until early morning, they played three sets of 90 minutes each. During this period, spurred by the group's need to extend their sets in order to minimize song repetition, came the band's, quote, "realization that songs could be extended with lengthy solos," unquote, wrote Nick Mason. After pressure from his parents and advice from his college tutors, Bob Close quit the band in mid-1965, and Sid Barrett took over on lead guitar. The group first referred to themselves as the Pink Floyd Sound in late 1965. Sid Barrett created the name on the spur of the moment when he discovered that another band, also called the T-Set, were to perform at one of their gigs. The name, the Pink Floyd Sound, is derived from the given names of two blues musicians whose Piedmont blues records Barrett had in his collection: Pink Anderson and Floyd Council. By 1966, the group's repertoire consisted mainly of rhythm and blues songs, and they had begun to receive paid bookings, including one for a performance at the Marquee Club in March 1966, where Peter Jenner noticed them. A lecturer at the London School of Economics, Peter Jenner was impressed by the sonic effects Sid Barrett and Richard Wright created, and with his business partner and friend, Andrew King, he became their manager. The pair had little experience in the music industry and used King's inherited money to set up Black Hill Enterprises, purchasing about £1,000 worth of new instruments and equipment for the band. It was around this time that Jenner suggested they drop the Sound part of their band name, thus becoming the Pink Floyd. Under Jenner and King's guidance, the group became part of London's underground music scene, playing at venues including All Saints Hall and the Marquee. While performing at the Countdown Club, the band had experimented with long instrumental excursions, and they began to expand upon these with rudimentary but visually effective light shows projected by colored slides and domestic lights. Jenner and King's social connections helped gain the band prominent coverage in the Financial Times, and an article in the Sunday Times which stated, quote, "At the launching of the new magazine It the other night, a pop group called the Pink Floyd played throbbing music while a series of bizarre colored shapes flashed on a huge screen behind them, apparently very psychedelic," unquote. In 1966, they strengthened their business relationship with Black Hill Enterprises, becoming equal partners with Jenner and King, and the band members each holding a 1/6 share. By late 1966, their set included fewer R&B standards and more Barrett originals, many of which would be included on their first album. While they had significantly increased the frequency of their performances, the band were not widely accepted at the time. Following a performance at a Catholic youth club, the owner refused to pay them, claiming that their performance was not music. When their management filed suit in a small claims court against the owner of the youth organization, a local magistrate upheld the owner's decision. However, they were much better received at the UFO Club in London, where a small fan base began to build around the band. Sid Barrett's performances were enthusiastic, quote, "leaping around, madness, improvisation, inspired to get past his limitations and into areas that were very interesting, which none of the others could do," wrote biographer Nicholas Schaffner. signing with EMI. In 1967, Pink Floyd began to attract the attention of the mainstream music industry, while in negotiations with record companies, IT co-founder and UFO club manager Joe Boyd and Pink Floyd's booking agent Brian Morrison arranged for and funded the recording of some songs at Sound Techniques in West Hampstead. Included were the standout track Arnold Lane and Candy in a Currant Bun as its B-side, both of which they recorded on 29 January 1967. 3 days later, Pink Floyd signed with EMI, receiving a £5,000 advance. EMI released the band's first single, Arnold Lane, on 10 March 1967 on its Columbia label. The song's references to cross-dressing led to a ban by several radio stations. However, some creative manipulation by the retailers who supplied sales figures to the magazine business meant that the single peaked in the UK at number 20. EMI Columbia released Pink Floyd's second single, See Emily Play, on 16 June 1967. It fared slightly better than Arnold Lane, peaking at number 6 in the UK. They performed on the BBC's Look of the Week, where Roger Waters and Syd Barrett, erudite and engaging, faced tough questioning from Hans Keller. They appeared on the BBC's Top of the Pops, an immensely popular program that controversially required artists to mime their singing and playing. Though Pink Floyd returned for two more performances, by the third, Syd Barrett had begun to unravel, and it was around this time that the band first noticed significant changes in his behavior. By early 1967, Barrett was regularly using LSD, and Nick Mason described him as, quote, completely distanced from everything going on, unquote. The Piper at the Gates of Dawn. Brian Morrison and EMI producer Norman Smith negotiated Pink Floyd's first recording contract, and as part of the deal, the band agreed to record their first album at EMI Studios in London. Nick Mason recalls that the sessions were trouble-free. Norman Smith disagreed, stating that Syd Barrett was unresponsive to his suggestions and constructive criticism. EMI Columbia released The Piper at the Gates of Dawn in August 1967. The album peaked number 6, spending 14 weeks on the UK charts. Pink Floyd continued to draw large crowds at the UFO Club. However, Syd Barrett's mental breakdown was causing serious concern. The group initially hoped that his erratic behavior would be a passing phase, but some were less optimistic, including Jenner and his assistant, June Child, who commented, quote, I found Syd Barrett in the dressing room and he was so gone. Roger Waters and I got him on his feet and we got him out to the stage. The band started to play and Syd just stood there. He had his guitar around his neck and his arms were just hanging down. Forced to cancel Pink Floyd's appearance at the prestigious National Jazz and Blues Festival, as well as several other shows, Andrew King informed the music press that Syd Barrett was suffering from nervous exhaustion. Roger Waters arranged a meeting with psychiatrist R.D. Lang, and though Waters personally drove Barrett to the appointment, Barrett refused to come out of the car. A stay at Formentera with Sam Hutt, a doctor well established in the underground music scene, led to no visible improvement. The band followed a few concert dates in Europe during September, with their first tour of the U.S. in October. As the U.S. tour went on, Syd Barrett's condition grew steadily worse. During appearances on the Dick Clark and Pat Boone shows in November, Barrett confounded his hosts by not responding to questions and staring off into space. He refused to move his lips when it came time to mime See Emily Play on Boone's show. After these embarrassing episodes, Andrew King ended their U.S. visit and immediately sent them home to London. Soon after their return, they supported Jimi Hendrix during his tour of England. However, Barrett's depression worsened as the tour continued, reaching a crisis point in December when the band responded by adding a new member to the lineup. 1968 through 77. Transition and international success. David Gilmour replaces Syd Barrett. In December 1967, the group added guitarist David Gilmour as the fifth member of Pink Floyd. Gilmour already knew Barrett, having studied with him at Cambridge Tech in the early 1960s. The two had performed at lunchtimes together with guitars and harmonicas, and later hitchhiked and bussed their way around the south of France. In 1965, while a member of Joker's Wild, Dave Gilmore had watched the tea set. Morrison's assistant, Steve O'Rourke, set Gilmore up in a room at O'Rourke's house with a salary of £30 per week. And in January 1968, Black Hill Enterprises announced Dave Gilmore as the band's newest member, the second guitarist and its fifth member, the band intending to continue with Syd Barrett as a non-performing songwriter. Peter Jenner commented, quote, "The idea was that Dave would cover for Barrett's eccentricities, and when that got to be not workable, Syd was just going to write. Just try to keep him involved." In an expression of his frustration, Barrett, who was expected to write additional hit singles to follow up Arnold Lane and See Emily Play, instead played the band's Have You Got It Yet, intentionally changing the structure on each performance so as to make the song impossible to follow and learn. In a January 1968 photo shoot of the five-man Pink Floyd, the photographs show Barrett looking detached from the others, staring into the distance. Working with Syd Barrett eventually proved too difficult, and matters came to a head in January 1968 while en route to a performance in Southampton when a band member asked if he should collect Barrett. According to Dave Gilmore, the answer was, "No, let's not bother," signaling the end of Barrett's tenure with Pink Floyd. Roger Waters later admitted, quote, "He was our friend, but most of the time we now wanted to strangle him," unquote. In early March 1968, Pink Floyd met with business partners Jenner and King to discuss the band's future. Syd Barrett agreed to leave. Jenner and King believed Syd Barrett to be the creative genius of the band and decided to represent him and end their relationship with Pink Floyd. Brian Morrison then sold his business to NEMS Enterprises, and Steve O'Rourke became the band's personal manager. Black Hill Enterprises announced Syd Barrett's departure on 6 April 1968. After Barrett's departure, the burden of lyrical composition and creative direction fell mostly on Roger Waters. Initially, Gilmore mimed Barrett's voice on the group's European TV appearances. However, while playing on the university circuit, they avoided Barrett songs in favor of Waters and Wright material, such as It Would Be So Nice and Careful With That Axe, Eugene. A Saucer Full of Secrets. In 1968, Pink Floyd returned to Abbey Road Studios to record their second album, A Saucer Full of Secrets. The LP included Syd Barrett's final contribution to their discography, Jug Band Blues. Roger Waters began to develop his own songwriting, contributing Set the Controls for the Heart of the Sun, Let There Be More Light, and Corporal Clegg. Norman Smith encouraged them to self-produce their music, and they recorded demos of new material at their houses. With Smith's instruction at Abbey Road, they learned how to use the recording studio to realize their artistic vision. However, Smith remained unconvinced by their music, and when Mason struggled to perform his drum part on Remember a Day, Smith stepped in as his replacement. Richard Wright recalled Smith's attitude about the sessions, quote, "Norman gave up on the second album. He was forever saying things like, 'You can't do 20 minutes of this ridiculous noise.'" As neither Waters nor Mason could read music, to illustrate the structure of the album's title track, they invented their own system of notation. Gilmore later described their method as looking, quote, "like an architectural diagram," unquote. Released in June 1968, the album featured a psychedelic cover designed by Storm Thorgerson and Aubrey Powell of Hypnosis. The first of several Pink Floyd album covers designed by Hypnosis, it was the second time that EMI permitted one of their groups to contract designers for an album jacket. The release peaked at number 9, spending 11 weeks on the UK chart. Record Mirror gave the album an overall favorable review, but urged listeners to, quote, "forget it as background music to a party," unquote. John Peel described a live performance of the title track as like a religious experience, while NME described the song as, quote, "long and boring, with little to warrant its monotonous direction," unquote. On the day after the album's UK release, Pink Floyd performed at the first ever free concert in Hyde Park. Accompanied by The Soft Machine and The Who, it marked Pink Floyd's first significant tour. In December of that same year, they released Point Me at the Sky. No more successful than the two singles they had released since See Emily Play, It would be the band's last until their 1973 release, Money. Uma Guma, Adam Hartmother, and Metal. Uma Guma represented a departure from their previous work. Released as a double LP on EMI's Harvest label, the first two sides contained live performances recorded at Manchester College of Commerce and Mothers, a club in Birmingham. The second LP contained a single experimental contribution from each band member. Uma Guma received positive reviews upon its release in November 1969. The album peaked at number 5, spending 21 weeks on the UK chart. In October 1970, Pink Floyd released Atom Heartmother. An early version premiered in France in January, but disagreements over the mix prompted the hiring of Ron Geeson to work out the sound issues. Geeson worked to improve the score, but with little creative input from the band, production was troublesome. Geeson eventually completed the project with the aid of John Aldiss, who was the director of the choir hired to perform on the record. Norman Smith earned executive producer credit, and the album marked his final contribution to the band's discography. David Gilmour said it was, quote, a neat way of saying he didn't do anything, unquote. Roger Waters was critical of Atom Heartmother, claiming that he would prefer if it were, quote, thrown into a dustbin and never listened to by anyone ever again, unquote. David Gilmour was equally dismissive of the album and once described it as a load of rubbish, stating, quote, I think we were scraping the barrel a bit at that period, unquote. Pink Floyd's first number one album, Atom Heartmother, was hugely successful in Britain, spending 18 weeks on the UK chart. It premiered at the Bath Festival on 27 June 1970. Pink Floyd toured extensively across America and Europe in 1970. In 1971, Pink Floyd took second place in a reader's poll in Melody Maker, and for the first time were making a profit. Mason and Wright became fathers and bought homes in London, while Gilmour, still single, moved to a 19th century farm in Essex. Waters installed a home recording studio at his house in Islington in a converted tool shed in the back of his garden. In January 1971, upon their return from touring Atom Heartmother, Pink Floyd began working on new material. Lacking a central theme, they attempted several unproductive experiments. Engineer John Leckie described the sessions as often beginning in the afternoon and ending early the next morning, quote, during which time nothing would get accomplished. There was no record company contract whatsoever, except when their label manager would show up now and again with a couple of bottles of wine and a couple of joints, unquote. The band spent long periods working on basic sounds or a guitar riff. They also spent several days at Air Studios, attempting to create music using a variety of household objects, a project which would be revisited between Dark Side of the Moon and Wish You Were Here. Released in October 1971, quote, Metal not only confirms lead guitarist David Gilmour's emergence as a real shaping force with the group, it states forcefully and accurately that the group is well into the growth track again, unquote, wrote Gene Charles Costa of Rolling Stone. NME called Metal, quote, an exceptionally good album, singling out Echoes as the zenith which the Floyd had been striving for, unquote. Melody Maker's Michael Watts found it underwhelming, calling the album, quote, a soundtrack to a non-existent movie, unquote, and shrugging off Pink Floyd as, quote, so much sound and fury signifying nothing, unquote. Metal is a transitional album between the Barrett-influenced group of the late 1960s and the emerging Pink Floyd. The LP Metal peaked at number 3, spending 82 weeks on the UK chart. The Dark Side of the Moon. Pink Floyd recorded The Dark Side of the Moon between May 1972 and January 1973 with EMI staff engineer Alan Parsons at Abbey Road. The title, The Dark Side of the Moon, is an allusion to lunacy rather than astronomy. The band had composed and refined the material on Dark Side while touring the UK, Japan, North America, and Europe. Producer Chris Thomas assisted Parsons. Hypnosis designed the album's packaging, which included George Hardy's iconic refracting prism design on the cover. Thorgerson's Dark Side album cover features a beam of white light representing unity, passing through a prism which represents society. The resulting refracted beam of colored light symbolizes unity diffracted, leaving an absence of unity. Roger Waters is the sole author of the album's lyrics. Released in March 1973, The Dark Side of the Moon LP became an instant chart success in the UK and throughout Western Europe, earning an enthusiastic response from critics. Each member of Pink Floyd, except Roger Wright, boycotted the press release of The Dark Side of the Moon because a quadraphonic mix had not yet been completed, and they felt presenting the album through a poor-quality stereo PA system was insufficient. Melody Maker's Rob Hollingworth described Side 1 as, quote, utterly confused and difficult to follow, unquote, but praised Side 2, writing, quote, the songs, the sounds, and the rhythm were solid. The saxophone hit the air, the band rocked and rolled, unquote. Rolling Stone's Lloyd Grossman described it as, quote, a fine album with a textural and conceptual richness that not only invites, but demands involvement, unquote. Throughout March 1973, The Dark Side of the Moon featured as part of Pink Floyd's U.S. tour. The album is one of the most commercially successful rock albums of all time. A U.S. number one, it remained on the Billboard's chart for more than 14 years. In Britain, the album peaked at number two, spending 364 weeks on the UK chart. Dark Side is the world's second best-selling album, and the 21st best-selling album of all time in the U.S. The success of the album brought enormous wealth to the members of Pink Floyd. Roger Waters and Richard Wright bought large country houses, while Nick Mason became a collector of expensive cars. Disenchanted with their U.S. record company Capitol Records, Pink Floyd and Steve O'Rourke negotiated a new contract with Columbia Records, who gave them a reported advance of $1 million, which is worth approximately $5 million today. In Europe, Pink Floyd continues to be represented by Harvest Records. Wish You Were Here. After a tour of the UK performing Dark Side, Pink Floyd returned to the studio in January 1975 and began work on their ninth studio album, Wish You Were Here. Alan Parsons declined an offer to continue working with them, becoming successful in his own right with the Alan Parsons Project. And so the band turned to Brian Humphries. Initially, they found it difficult to compose new material. The success of The Dark Side of the Moon had left Pink Floyd physically and emotionally drained. Richard Wright later described these early sessions as, quote, falling within a difficult period, unquote. And Roger Waters found them, quote-unquote, torturous. David Gilmour was more interested in improving the band's existing material. Nick Mason's failing marriage left him in a general malaise and with a sense of apathy, both of which interfered with his drumming. Despite the lack of creative direction, Roger Waters began to visualize a new concept after several weeks. During 1974, Pink Floyd had sketched out three original compositions and had performed them in a series of concerts in Europe. These compositions became the starting point for a new album whose opening four-note guitar phrase, composed purely by chance by David Gilmour, reminded Roger Waters of Syd Barrett. The songs provided a fitting summary of the rise and fall of their former bandmate. Roger Waters commented, quote, because I wanted to get as close as possible to what I felt, that indefinable, inevitable melancholy about the disappearance of Syd, unquote. While Pink Floyd were performing the album, Syd Barrett made an impromptu visit to the studio, during which Storm Thorgerson recalled that he, quote, sat around and talked for a bit, but he wasn't really there, unquote. Barrett had changed significantly in appearance, so much so that the band did not initially recognize him. Roger Waters was reportedly deeply upset by the experience. Most of Wish You Were Here premiered on 5 July 1975 at an open-air music festival in Nebworth. Released in September, it reached number one in both UK and the US. Animals. Main article, Animals, Pink Floyd album. In 1975, Pink Floyd bought a three-story group of church halls at 35 Britannia Row in Islington and began converting the building into a recording studio and storage space. In 1976, they recorded their 10th album, Animals, in their newly finished 24-track studio. The concept of animals originated with Roger Waters, loosely based on George Orwell's political fable, Animal Farm. The album's lyrics describe different classes of society as dogs, pigs, and sheep. Hipgnosis received credit for the packaging of Animals. However, Roger Waters designed the final concept, choosing an image of the aging Battersea Power Station, over which they superimposed an image of a pig. The division of royalties was a source of conflict between band members, who earned royalties on a per-song basis. Although David Gilmour was largely responsible for Dogs, which took up almost the entire first side of the album, he received less than Waters, who contributed the much shorter two-part Pigs on the Wing. Richard Wright commented, quote, "It was partly my fault because I didn't push my material, but Dave did have something to offer and only managed to get a couple of things on there," unquote. Mason recalled, quote, "Roger was in full flow with the ideas, but he was really keeping Dave down and frustrating him deliberately," unquote. Gilmour, distracted by the birth of his first child, contributed little else to the album. Similarly, neither Nick Mason nor Richard Wright contributed much toward Animals. Richard Wright had marital problems, and his relationship with Waters was also suffering. Animals is the first Pink Floyd album that does not include a writing credit for Richard Wright, who commented, quote, "Animals wasn't a fun record to make. This was when Roger really started to believe that he was the sole writer for the band, and it was only because of him that we were still going. When he started to develop his ego trips, the person he would have his conflicts with would be me," unquote. Released in January 1977, the album Animals peaked on the UK chart at number 2 and the US chart at number 3. NME described the album as, quote, "one of the most extreme, relentless, harrowing, and downright iconoclastic hunks of music," unquote. And Melody Maker's Carl Dallas called it, quote, "an uncomfortable taste of reality in a medium that has become in recent years increasingly soporific," unquote. They performed much of the album's material during their In the Flesh tour, Pink Floyd's first experience playing large stadiums, the size of which caused unease in the band. Waters began arriving at each venue alone, departing immediately after the performance. On one occasion, Richard Wright flew back to England, threatening to leave the band. At the Montreal Olympic Stadium, a group of noisy and enthusiastic fans in the front row of the audience irritated Waters so much that he spat on one of them. The end of the tour marked a low point for Dave Gilmour, who felt that the band had achieved the success they had sought, with nothing left for them to accomplish. 1978-85, Waters led era, The Wall, main articles, The Wall, and Pink Floyd, The Wall. In July 1978, amid a financial turmoil caused by negligent investments, Roger Waters presented the group with two original ideas for their next album. The first was a 90-minute demo with the working title Bricks in the Wall, and the other would later become Roger's first solo album, The Pros and Cons of Hitchhiking. Although both Nick Mason and Dave Gilmour were initially cautious, they chose Bricks in the Wall to be their next album. Canadian keyboardist Bob Ezrin co-produced and wrote a 40-page script for the new album. Ezrin based the story on the central figure of Pink, a Gestalt character inspired by Roger Waters' childhood experiences, the most notable of which was the death of his father in World War II. This first metaphorical brick led to more problems. Pink would later become drug-addled and depressed by the music industry, eventually transforming into a megalomaniac, a development inspired partly by the decline of Syd Barrett. At the end of the album, the increasingly fascist audience watches as Pink tears down the wall, once again becoming a regular and caring person. During the recording of The Wall, Roger Waters, Dave Gilmour, and Nick Mason became increasingly dissatisfied with Richard Wright's lack of contribution to the album. Gilmour said that Wright, quote, "hadn't contributed anything of any value whatsoever to the album. He did very, very little, and that is why he got the boot," unquote. According to Nick Mason, quote, "Rick's contribution was to turn up and sit in on the sessions without actually doing anything, just being a producer," unquote. Roger Waters commented, quote, "Wright was not prepared to cooperate in making the record, and it was agreed by everybody. Either he can have a long battle, or he can agree to finish making the album, keep his full share, but at the end of it, he would leave quietly." Rick agreed. Although Pink Floyd had not released a single since 1973's Money, Another Brick in the Wall Part 2 supported the album, topping the charts in the US and the UK. Released on 30 November 1979, The Wall topped the Billboard chart in the US for 15 weeks, reaching number 3 in the UK. The Wall ranks number 3 on the RIAA's list of all-time top 100 albums, with 23 million certified units sold in the US. The cover is one of their most minimalist designs, with a stark white brick wall and no trademark or brand name. It was also their first album cover since The Piper at the Gates of Dawn, not designed by Hypnosis. Gerald Scarfe produced a series of animations for the subsequent live shows, The Wall Tour. He also commissioned the construction of large inflatable puppets representing characters from the storyline, including the mother, the ex-wife, and the schoolmaster. Pink Floyd used the puppets during their performances of the album. Relationships within the band were at an all-time low, their four Winnebagos parked in a circle, the doors facing away from the center. Roger Waters used his own vehicle to arrive at the venue and stayed in different hotels from the rest of the band. Richard Wright returned as a paid musician and was the only one of the four to profit from the venture, which lost about $600,000. The Wall concept also spawned a film, the original idea for which was to be a combination of live concert footage and animated scenes. However, the concert footage proved impractical to film. Screenwriter Alan Parker agreed to direct and took a different approach. The animated sequences would remain, but scenes would be acted by professional actors with no dialogue. Roger Waters was screen-tested but quickly discarded, and they asked Irish singer-songwriter Bob Geldof to accept the role of Pink. Geldof was initially dismissive, condemning The Wall's storyline as quote-unquote bollocks. Eventually won over by the prospect of participation in a significant film and receiving a large payment for his work, Bob Geldof agreed. Screened at the Cannes Film Festival in May 1982, Pink Floyd, The Wall, premiered in the UK that following July 1982. The Final Cut. Main article, The Final Cut. In 1982, Roger Waters suggested a new musical project for the band with the working title Spare Bricks, originally conceived as the soundtrack album for Pink Floyd, The Wall. However, with the onset of the Falklands War, Waters changed artistic direction and began writing new material. Waters saw Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher's response to the invasion of the Falklands as jingoistic and unnecessary, and he dedicated the new album to his late father. Immediately, there were arguments between Waters and Gilmour, who felt that the album should include all new material rather than recycling a number of songs passed over for The Wall. Waters felt that Gilmour had contributed little to the band's lyrical repertoire. American composer Michael Kamen, a contributor to the orchestral arrangements of The Wall, mediated between the two, also performing the role traditionally occupied by the then-absent Richard Wright. The tension within the band grew. Waters and Gilmour worked independently. However, Gilmour began to feel the strain, sometimes barely maintaining his composure. After a final confrontation, Gilmour's name disappeared from the credit list, reflecting what Waters felt was his lack of songwriting contributions. Though Nick Mason's musical contributions were minimal, he stayed busy recording sound effects for an experimental holophonic system to be used on the album. With marital problems of his own, Mason remained a distant figure. For the final cut, Pink Floyd did not use Storm Thorgerson for the cover design, Waters choosing to design the cover himself. Released in March 1983, the final cut went straight to number 1 in the UK and number 6 in the US. Roger Waters wrote all the lyrics, as well as all the music on the album. Gilmour did not have any material ready for the album, and asked Waters to delay recording until he could write some songs, but Waters refused. Gilmour later commented, quote, "I'm certainly guilty at times of being lazy, but he wasn't right about wanting to put some duff tracks on the final cut," unquote. Rolling Stone magazine gave the album 5 stars, with Kurt Loder calling it, quote, "a superlative achievement, art rock's crowning masterpiece," unquote. Loder viewed the final cut as, quote, "essentially a Roger Waters solo album," unquote. A Spent Force and Waters' Departure. David Gilmour had recorded his second solo album, About Face, in 1984, and he used it to express his feelings about a variety of topics, from the murder of John Lennon to his relationship with Roger Waters. He later stated that he used the album to distance himself from Pink Floyd, Soon afterwards, Waters began touring his first solo album, The Pros and Cons of Hitchhiking. Richard Wright formed Z with Dave Harris and recorded Identity, which went almost unnoticed upon its release. Nick Mason released his second solo album, Profiles, in August 1985. Following the release of The Pros and Cons of Hitchhiking, Roger Waters publicly insisted that Pink Floyd would not reunite. He contacted band manager Steve O'Rourke to discuss settling future royalty payments. O'Rourke felt obliged to inform Mason and Gilmour, and this angered Waters, who then terminated his management contract with O'Rourke and employed Peter Rudge to manage his affairs. Waters wrote to EMI and Columbia announcing he had left the band and asked them to release him from his contractual obligations. Gilmour believed that Waters left to hasten the demise of Pink Floyd. Waters later said that by not making new albums, Pink Floyd would be in breach of contract, which would suggest royalty payments would be suspended, and that other band members had forced him from the group by threatening to sue him. Waters then went to the High Court in an effort to dissolve the band and prevent the use of the Pink Floyd name, declaring Pink Floyd, quote, a spent force creatively, unquote. When Waters' lawyers discovered that the partnership had never been formally confirmed, Waters returned to the High Court in an attempt to obtain a veto over further use of the band's name. David Gilmour responded by issuing a carefully worded press release affirming that Pink Floyd would continue to exist. He later told the Sunday Times, quote, Roger is a dog in the manger, and I'm going to fight him, unquote. 1986 to 95, Gilmour-led era. A Momentary Lapse of Reason. Main article, A Momentary Lapse of Reason. In 1987, Dave Gilmour began recruiting musicians for what would become Pink Floyd's first album without Waters, A Momentary Lapse of Reason. There were legal obstacles to Wright's readmittance to the band. However, after meeting in Hampstead, Pink Floyd invited Wright to participate in the coming sessions. Gilmour later stated that Wright's presence, quote, would make us stronger legally and musically, unquote. Pink Floyd employed Wright as a paid musician with weekly earnings of $11,000. Recording sessions for the album began on Gilmour's houseboat, the Astoria, moored along the River Thames. Gilmour worked with several songwriters, including Eric Stewart and Roger McGough, eventually choosing Anthony Moore to write the album's lyrics. Gilmour would later admit that the project was difficult without Waters' creative direction. Nick Mason, concerned that he was too out of practice to perform on the album, made use of session musicians to complete many of the drum parts. Mason instead busied himself with the album's sound effects. The album, A Momentary Lapse of Reason, was released in September 1987. Storm Thorgerson, whose creative input was absent from The Wall and The Final Cut, designed the album cover. In order to drive home the point that Waters had left the band, they included a group photograph on the inside cover, the first since Metal. A Momentary Lapse of Reason, the album went straight to number 3 in the UK and the US. Waters commented, quote, I think it's facile, but quite clever forgery. The songs are poor in general, and Gilmour's lyrics are third-rate, unquote. Although Gilmour initially viewed the album as a return to the band's top form, Wright disagreed, stating, quote, Roger's criticisms are fair. It's not a band album at all, unquote. Q magazine described the album as essentially a Gilmour solo effort. Roger Waters attempted to subvert the Momentary Lack of Reason tour by contacting promoters in the U.S. and threatening to sue them if they used the Pink Floyd name. Gilmour and Mason funded the startup costs, with Mason using his Ferrari 250 GTO as collateral. Early rehearsals for the upcoming tour were chaotic, with Mason and Wright entirely out of practice. Realizing he had taken on too much work, Dave Gilmour asked Bob Ezrin to assist them. As Pink Floyd toured throughout North America, Roger Waters' Radio Chaos tour was, on occasion, close by, though in much smaller venues than those hosting his former band's performances. Waters issued a writ of copyright fees for the band's use of The Flying Pig. Pink Floyd responded by attaching a large set of male genitalia to its underside to distinguish Pink Floyd's from Waters' design. The parties reached a legal agreement on 23 December. Mason and Gilmour retained the right to use the Pink Floyd name in perpetuity, and Roger Waters received exclusive rights to, among other things, The Wall. The Division Bell. Main article, The Division Bell. For several years, Pink Floyd had busied themselves with personal pursuits, such as filming and competing in the La Carrera Panamericana and recording a soundtrack for a film based on the event. In January 1993, they began working on a new album, returning to Britannia Row Studios, where, for several days, Gilmour, Mason, and Wright worked collaboratively ad-libbing material. Bob Ezrin returned to co-produce the album, and production moved to the Astoria, moored on the River Thames, where, from February to May 1993, they worked on about 25 ideas. Contractually, Richard Wright was not a member of the band. He commented, quote, "It came close to the point where I wasn't going to do the album," unquote. However, Wright earned 5 co-writing credits on the album, his first on a Pink Floyd album since 1975's Wish You Were Here. Another songwriter credited on the album was Gilmour's future wife, Polly Sampson. She helped him write several tracks, including High Hopes, a collaborative arrangement which, though initially tense, quote, "pulled the whole album together," unquote, commented Bob Ezrin. They hired Michael Kamen to arrange the album's orchestral parts. Dick Perry and Chris Thomas also returned. Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy writer Douglas Adams provided the album title, and Storm Thorgerson the cover artwork. Thorgerson drew inspiration for the album cover from the Moai monoliths of Easter Island, two opposing faces forming an implied third face, about which Thorgerson commented, quote, "The absent face, the ghost of Pink Floyd's past, Sid and Roger." Eager to avoid competing against other album releases, as had happened with A Momentary Lapse of Reason, Pink Floyd set a deadline of April 1994, at which point they would resume touring. Pink Floyd spent more than 2 weeks rehearsing in an aircraft hangar at Norton Air Force Base in San Bernardino, California, before opening on 29 March 1994 in Miami, Florida, with an almost identical road crew to that used for their Momentary Lapse of Reason tour. They played a variety of Pink Floyd favorites and later changed their set list to include The Dark Side of the Moon in its entirety. The tour ended on 29 October 1994 with the final performance of the last Pink Floyd tour so far. 2005 to present. Reunion, deaths, and final album. Live 8 Reunion. See also Live 8. On 2 July 2005, Roger Waters, David Gilmour, Nick Mason, and Richard Wright performed together as Pink Floyd for the first time in more than 24 years at the Live 8 concert in London's Hyde Park. Organizer Bob Geldof arranged the reunion, having called Mason earlier in the year to explore the possibility of their reuniting for the event. Geldof asked Gilmour, who turned down the offer, and then asked Mason to intercede on his behalf. Mason declined, but contacted Roger Waters, who was immediately enthusiastic. Waters then called Geldof to discuss the event, scheduled to take place in 1 month. About 2 weeks later, Waters called Gilmour, their first conversation in 2 years, and on the next day, Dave Gilmour agreed. Gilmour then contacted Richard Wright, who immediately agreed. In their statement to the press, they stressed the unimportance of the band's problems in the context of the Live 8 event. They planned their set list at the Connaught Hotel in London, followed by 3 days of rehearsals at the Black Island Studios. The sessions were problematic, with minor disagreements over the style and pace of the songs they were practicing, the running order decided on the eve of the event. At the beginning of their performance, Roger Waters told the audience, quote, "It's quite emotional standing up here with these three guys, after all these years, standing to be counted with the rest of you. We're doing this for everyone who's not here, and particularly, of course, for Sid," unquote. At the end, David Gilmour thanked the audience and started to walk off the stage. Roger Waters called him back, and the band shared a group hug. Images of that hug were a favorite among Sunday newspapers after Live 8. Roger Waters commented on their almost 20 years of animosity. Quote, "I don't think any of us came out of the years from 1985 with any credit. It was a bad, negative time, and I regret my part in that negativity." Unquote. Though Pink Floyd turned down a contract worth £136 million for a final tour, Roger Waters did not rule out more performances, suggesting it ought to be for a charity event only. However, David Gilmour told the Associated Press that a reunion would not happen, stating, quote, "The Live 8 rehearsals convinced me that it wasn't something I wanted to be doing a lot of." There have been all sorts of farewell moments in people's lives and careers, which they have then rescinded. But I think I can fairly, categorically say that there won't be a tour or an album again that I take part in. It isn't to do with animosity or anything like that. It's just, I've been there, I've done it. Unquote. In February 2006, David Gilmour was interviewed by Gino Castaldo from the Italian newspaper La Repubblica. The resulting article declared, quote, "Patience for fans in mourning. The news is official. Pink Floyd, the band, is dissolved, finished, definitely deceased," unquote. Asked about the future of Pink Floyd, Gilmour responded, quote, "It's over. I've had enough. I'm 60 years old. It is much more comfortable to work on my own," unquote. Gilmour and Waters repeatedly said that they have no plans to reunite with the surviving former members. Deaths of Barrett and Wright. Sid Barrett died on 7 July 2006 at his home in Cambridge, aged 60. His family interred him at Cambridge Crematorium on 18 July 2006. No Pink Floyd members attended. After Sid Barrett's death, Richard Wright commented, quote, "The band are very naturally upset and sad to hear of Sid Barrett's death. Sid was the guiding light of the early band lineup and leaves a legacy which continues to inspire," unquote. Although Barrett had faded into obscurity over the previous 35 years, the national press praised him for his contributions to music. On 10 May 2007, Waters, Gilmour, Wright, and Mason performed during a Barrett tribute concert at the Barbican Centre in London. Gilmour, Wright, and Mason performed the Barrett compositions Bike and Arnold Lane, and Roger Waters performed a solo version of his song Flickering Flame. Richard Wright died of an undisclosed form of cancer on 15 September 2008, age 65. His surviving former bandmates praised Wright for his influence on the sound of Pink Floyd. Further performances and re-releases. On 10 July 2010, Waters and Gilmour performed together at a charity event for the Hoping Foundation. The event, which raised money for Palestinian children, took place at Kiddington Hall in Oxfordshire, England, where they played to an audience of approximately 200. In return for Waters' appearance at the event, Gilmour agreed to perform Comfortably Numb at one of Waters' upcoming performances of The Wall. On 12 May 2011, at the O2 Arena in London, David Gilmour honored his commitment to Roger Waters. Gilmour sang the first and second chorus and played the two guitar solos. Near the end of the show, after the wall had fallen down, Roger Waters said to the crowd, quote, "So now we know tonight was the night when David did me an enormous honor of coming to play Comfortably Numb. So please welcome David Gilmour." By a strange and extraordinary happy coincidence, there is another remnant of our old band here tonight. Please welcome Mr. Nick Mason to the stage," unquote. David Gilmour with a mandolin and Nick Mason with a tambourine joined Roger Waters and the rest of his band for Outside the Wall. On 26 September 2011, Pink Floyd and EMI launched an exhaustive re-release campaign under the title Why Pink Floyd, reissuing the band's back catalog in newly remastered versions, including Experience and Immersion, multi-disc, multi-format editions. James Guthrie, co-producer of The Wall, remastered the albums. The Endless River. Main title, The Endless River. In 2012, Dave Gilmour and Nick Mason decided to revisit recordings made with Richard Wright, mainly during the Division Bell sessions, to create a new Pink Floyd album. They recruited session musicians to help record new parts and, quote, "generally harness studio technology," unquote. Nick Mason described the album as a tribute to Richard Wright, quote, "I think this record is a good way of recognizing a lot of what he does and how his playing was at the heart of the Pink Floyd sound. Listening back to the sessions, it really brought home to me what a special player he was," unquote. Roger Waters was not involved.
David Gilmour's wife, Polly Sampson, announced The Endless River in July 2014 on Twitter. Details were announced on Pink Floyd's website on 7 July, describing it as mainly ambient and instrumental music. The Endless River was released 7 November 2014. It is the second Pink Floyd album distributed by Parlophone following the release of the 20th anniversary editions of The Division Bell earlier in 2014. It became the most pre-ordered album of all time on Amazon UK and debuted at number 1 in several countries. The vinyl edition was the fastest-selling UK vinyl release in 2014 and the fastest-selling since 1997. The album received mixed reviews. Gilmour stated that The Endless River is Pink Floyd's last album, saying, quote, "I think we have successfully commandeered the best of what there is. It's a shame, but this is the end." Unquote. There was no tour to support the album, as Gilmour said, it was, quote, "kind of impossible," unquote, without Richard Wright. In 2015, Gilmour reiterated that Pink Floyd were, quote-unquote, "done," and that to reunite without Richard Wright, quote, "would just be wrong," unquote. There was no tour to support the album, as Gilmour said, it was, quote, "kind of impossible," unquote, without Richard Wright. In 2015, Gilmour reiterated that Pink Floyd were, quote-unquote, "done," and that to reunite without Richard Wright, quote, "would just be wrong," unquote. Musicianship. Genres. Considered one of the UK's first psychedelic music groups, Pink Floyd began their career at the vanguard of London's underground music scene. Some categorized their work from that era as a space rock. According to Rolling Stone, quote, "By 1967, they had developed an unmistakably psychedelic sound, performing long, loud, suite-like compositions that touched on hard rock, blues, country, folk, and electronic music," unquote. Released in 1968, the song "Careful With That Axiogene" helped galvanize their reputation as an art rock group. Critics also described them as an acid rock band. By the late 1960s, the press had begun to label their music as progressive rock. O'Neill Serber comments on the music of Pink Floyd, quote, "Rarely will you find Floyd dishing up catchy hooks, tunes short enough for airplay, or predictable three-chord blues progressions. And never will you find them spending much time on the usual pop palbum of romance, partying, or self-hype. Their sonic universe is expansive, intense, and challenging. Where most other bands neatly fit the songs to the music, the two forming an autonomous, seamless whole, complete with the hooks, Pink Floyd tends to set lyrics within a broader soundscape that often seems to have a life of its own. Pink Floyd employs extended, standalone instrumentals, which are never mere vehicles for showing off virtuoso, but are planned and integral parts of their performance," unquote. In 1968, Richard Wright commented on Pink Floyd's sonic reputation, quote, "It's hard to see why we were cast as the first British psychedelic group. We never saw ourselves that way. We realized that we were, after all, only playing for fun, tied to no particular form of music. We could do whatever we wanted. The emphasis is firmly on spontaneity and improvisation," unquote. Roger Waters gave a less enthusiastic assessment of the band's early sound, quote, "There wasn't anything grand about it. We were laughable. We were useless. We couldn't play at all, so we had to do something stupid and experimental. Sid was a genius, but I would not want to go back to playing Interstellar Overdrive for hours and hours." Unconstrained by conventional pop formats, Pink Floyd were innovators of progressive rock during the 1970s and ambient music during the 1980s. Gilmour's guitar work. Main article, David Gilmour. Critic Alan DiPerna praised Gilmour's guitar work as an integral element of Pink Floyd's sound. Rolling Stone ranked Gilmour number 14 in their 100 Greatest Guitarists of All Time list, and DiPerna described him as the most important guitarist of the 1970s, calling him, quote, "the missing link between Hendrix and Van Halen," unquote. In 2006, Gilmour commented on his playing technique, quote, "My fingers make a distinctive sound. They aren't very fast, but I think I'm instantly recognizable. The way I play melodies is connected to things like Hank Marvin and The Shadows," unquote. Gilmour's ability to use fewer notes than most to express himself without sacrificing strength or beauty drew a favorable comparison to jazz trumpeter Miles Davis. In 2006, Guitar World writer Jimmy Brown described Gilmour's guitar style as, quote, characterized by simple, huge-sounding riffs, gutsy, well-paced solos, and rich ambient chordal textures, unquote. According to Jimmy Brown, Gilmour's solos on Money, Time, and Comfortably Numb, quote, cut through the mix like a laser beam through fog, unquote. Brown described the Time solo as, quote, a masterpiece of phrasing and motivic development. Gilmour paces himself throughout and builds upon his initial idea by leaping into an upper register with gut-wrenching 1 1/2-step overbends, soulful triplet arpeggios, and a typically impeccable bar vibrato, unquote. Gilmour paces himself throughout and builds upon his initial idea by leaping into the upper register with gut-wrenching 1 1/2-step overbends, soulful triplet arpeggios, and a typically impeccable bar vibrato, unquote. Brown described Gilmour's sense of phrasing as intuitive, singling it out as perhaps his best asset as a lead guitarist. Gilmour explained how he achieved his signature tone. Quote, I usually use a fuzz box, a delay, and a bright EQ setting. To get singing sustained, you need to play loud, at or near the feedback threshold. It's just so much more fun to play when bent notes slice right through you like a razor blade. Unquote. Sonic experimentation. Throughout their career, Pink Floyd experimented with their sound. Their second single, See Emily Play, premiered at the Queen Elizabeth Hall in London on 12 May 1967. During the performance, the group first used an early quadraphonic device called an azimuth coordinator. The device enabled the controller, usually Richard Wright, to manipulate the band's amplified sound combined with recorded tapes, projecting the sounds 270 degrees around the venue, achieving a sonic swirling effect. In 1972, they purchased a custom-built PA, which featured a four-channel 360-degree system. Roger Waters experimented with the EMS Synthi A and VCS 3 synthesizers on Pink Floyd pieces such as On the Run, Welcome to the Machine, and In the Flesh. Waters used a Benson Echorec 2 echo effect on his bass guitar track for One of These Days. Pink Floyd used innovative sound effects and state-of-the-art audio recording technology during the final cut. Nick Mason's contribution to the album were almost entirely limited to work with the experimental holophonic system, an audio processing technique used to simulate a three-dimensional effect. The system used a conventional stereo tape to produce an effect that seemed to move the sound around the listener's head when they were wearing headphones. The process enabled the engineer to simulate moving the sound behind, above, or beside the listener's ear. Film scores. Pink Floyd also composed several film scores starting in 1968 with The Committee. In 1969, they recorded the score for Barbet Schroeder's film, More. The soundtrack proved beneficial. Not only did it play well, but along with A Saucerful of Secrets, the material they created became part of their live shows for some time thereafter. While composing the soundtrack for director Michelangelo Antonini's film, Zabriskie Point, the band stayed at a luxury hotel in Rome for almost a month. Roger Waters claimed that without Antonini's constant changes to the music, they would have completed the work in less than a week. Eventually, Antonini used only three of their recordings. One of the pieces turned down by Antonini, called The Violent Sequence, later became Us and Them, included on 1973's The Dark Side of the Moon. In 1971, the band again worked with Schroeder on the film La Vallée, for which they released a soundtrack album called Obscured by Clouds. They composed the material in about a week at the Chateau d'Erreville near Paris, and upon its release, it became Pink Floyd's first album to break into the top 50 on the U.S. Billboard chart. Live performances. Main article, Pink Floyd Live Performances. Regarded as pioneers of live music performance and renowned for their lavish stage shows, Pink Floyd also set high standards in sound quality, making use of innovative sound effects and quadraphonic speaker systems.
From their earliest days, they employed visual effects to accompany their psychedelic rock music while performing at venues such as the UFO Club in London. Their Slide and Light show was one of the first in British rock, and it helped them become popular among London's underground. To celebrate the launch of the London Free Schools magazine International Times in 1966, they performed in front of 2,000 people at the opening of The Roundhouse, attended by celebrities including Paul McCartney and Marianne Faithfull. In mid-1966, road manager Peter Wynne Wilson joined their road crew and updated the band's lighting rig with some innovative ideas, including the use of polarizers, mirrors, and stretched condoms. After their record deal with EMI, Pink Floyd purchased a Ford Transit van, then considered extravagant band transportation. On 29 April 1967, they headlined an all-night event called the 14-Hour Technicolor Dream at the Alexander Palace, London. Pink Floyd arrived at the festival at around 3 o'clock in the morning after a long journey by van and ferry from the Netherlands, taking the stage just as the sun was beginning to rise. In July 1969, precipitated by their space-related music and lyrics, they took part in the live BBC television coverage of the Apollo 11 moon landing, performing an instrumental piece which they called Moonhead. In November 1974, they employed for the first time the large circular screen that would become a staple of their live shows. In 1977, they employed the use of a large inflatable floating pig named Algy. Filled with helium and propane, Algy, while floating above the audience, would explode with a loud noise during the In the Flesh tour. The behavior of the audience during the tour, as well as the large size of the venues, proved a strong influence on their concept album, The Wall. The subsequent The Wall tour featured a 40-foot, 12-meter high wall built from cardboard bricks constructed between the band and the audience. They projected animations onto the wall while gaps allowed the audience to view various scenes from the story. One striking feature of the tour was the performance of Comfortably Numb. While Roger Waters sang his opening verse in darkness, David Gilmour waited for his cue on top of the wall. When it came, bright blue and white lights would suddenly reveal him. Gilmour stood on a flight case on casters, an insecure setup supported from behind by a technician. A large hydraulic platform supported both Gilmour and the technician. During the Division Bell tour, an unknown person using the name Publius posted a message on the internet news group inviting fans to solve a riddle supposedly concealed in the new album. White lights in front of the stage at the Pink Floyd concert in East Rutherford spelled out the words Enigma Publius. During a televised concert at Earl's Court on 20 November 1994, someone projected the word Enigma in large letters on the backdrop of the stage. Nick Mason later acknowledged that the record company had instigated the Publius Enigma mystery rather than the band. During the Division Bell tour, an unknown person using the name Publius posted a message on an internet news group inviting fans to solve a riddle supposedly concealed in the new album. White lights in front of the stage at the Pink Floyd concert in East Rutherford spelled out the words Enigma Publius. During a televised concert at Earl's Court on 20 October 1994, someone projected the word Enigma in large letters on the backdrop of the stage. Nick Mason later acknowledged that the record company, not the band, had instigated the Publius Enigma mystery. Lyrical themes. Marked by Roger Waters' philosophical lyrics, Rolling Stone described Pink Floyd as, quote, purveyors of a distinctly dark vision, unquote. Author Jerry O'Neill Serber wrote, quote, their interests are truth and illusion, life and death, time and space, causality and chance, compassion and indifference, unquote. Roger Waters identified empathy as a central theme in the lyrics of Pink Floyd. Author George Reisch described the album Metal's psychedelic opus, Echoes, as, quote, built around the core idea of genuine communication, sympathy, and collaboration with others, unquote. Despite having been labeled, quote, the gloomiest man in rock, unquote, Roger Waters was described by author Dina Weinstein as an existentialist, dismissing the unfavorable moniker as the result of misinterpretation by music critics. Disillusionment, absence, and non-being. Roger Waters' lyrics to Wish You Were Here's Have a Cigar deal with the perceived lack of sincerity on the part of music industry representatives. The song illustrates a dysfunctional dynamic between the band and a record label executive who congratulates the group on their current sales success, implying that they're all on the same page, while revealing he erroneously believes Pink is the name of one of the band members. According to author David Detmer, the album's lyrics deal with the dehumanizing aspect of the world's commerce, a situation the artist must endure in order to reach their audience. Absence as a lyrical theme is common in the music of Pink Floyd. Examples include the absence of Barrett after 1968, and that of Waters' father, who died during the Second World War. Waters' lyrics also explored unrealized political goals and unsuccessful endeavors. Their film score, Obscured by Clouds, dealt with the loss of youthful exuberance that sometimes comes with aging. Longtime Pink Floyd album cover designer Storm Thorgerson described the lyrics of Wish You Were Here, quote, "The idea of presence withheld, of the ways that people pretend to be present while their minds are really elsewhere, and the devices and motivations employed psychologically by people to suppress the full force of their presence eventually boiled down to a single theme, absence. The absence of a person, the absence of a feeling," unquote. Roger Waters commented, quote, "It's about none of us really being there. It should have been called Wish We Were Here." O'Neill Serber explored the lyrics of Pink Floyd and declared the issue of non-being a common theme in their music. Waters invoked non-being, or non-existence, in The Wall, with the lyrics to Comfortably Numb, quote, "Waters invoked non-being, or non-existence, in The Wall, with the lyrics to Comfortably Numb, quote, "I caught a fleeting glimpse out of the corner of my eye. I turned to look, but it was gone. I cannot put my finger on it now. The child is grown, the dream is gone," unquote. Barrett referred to non-being in his final contribution to the band's catalog, Jug Band Blues, quote, "I'm most obliged to you for making it clear that I'm not here," unquote. Exploitation and oppression. Author Patrick Croskrey described Animals as a blend of the powerful sounds and suggestive themes of Darkseid with The Wall's portrayal of artistic alienation. Author Patrick Croskrey described Animals as a unique blend of powerful sounds and suggestive themes of The Dark Side of the Moon with The Wall's portrayal of artistic alienation. He drew a parallel between the album's political themes and that of Orwell's Animal Farm. Animals begins with a thought experiment which asks, quote, "If you didn't care what happened to me, and I didn't care for you," unquote, then develops a beast fable based on anthropomorphized characters using music to reflect the individual states of mind of each. The lyrics ultimately paint a picture of dystopia, the inevitable result of a world devoid of empathy and compassion, answering the question posed in the opening lines. The album's characters include the dogs, representing fervent capitalists, the pigs, symbolizing political corruption, and the sheep, who represent the exploited. Croskrey described the sheep as being in a, quote, "state of delusion created by misleading cultural identity," unquote, a false consciousness. The dog, in his tireless pursuit of self-interest and success, ends up depressed and alone with no one to trust, utterly lacking emotional satisfaction after a life of exploitation. Waters used Mary Whitehouse as an example of a pig, being someone who, in his estimation, used the power of the government to impose her values on society. At the album's conclusion, Waters returns to empathy with the lyrical statement, quote, "You know that I care what happens to you, and I know that you care for me, too," unquote. However, he also acknowledges that the pigs are a continuing threat and reveals that he is a dog who requires shelter, suggesting the need for a balance between state, commerce, and community, versus an ongoing battle among them. This sound file and all text in the article are licensed under the Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 Unported License, available on the web at http://creativecommons.org/licenses/B as in boy, Y as in Yankee, -S as in Sam, A as in Alpha, /3.0.